Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 369 of the Roguecast, recorded April 19th, 2022. 4-1 out for the beat.
All right, we are back for another go at this.
Yeah, is this 3 weeks in a row?
3 weeks in a row.
We've won.
Yes.
We won podcasting.
We declare victory, this is it.
All other podcasters can suck it. Sorry, Lore. You had your chance.
Yeah, sorry, This American Life. You tried.
But we just knocked out three in a row, so yeah. Kiss our ass. Hey, no, but what number are we on? We're actually kind of high up there.
369.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
Yep, and yet, we still only have like four listeners.
Yeah, well, you know, they're the four best people in the world.
It's true.
There's more than four.
Nick seems to think there's more than four. I have actually... There's Russell Sinclair.
Yep.
Rob.
It's going to be sad if you name all our listeners.
Rob. The customers have been talking... I've been talking to customers lately who have mentioned stuff on the podcast. Somebody put down for the thing where we're going to give out some extra free comic book day comics.
Yep.
And I'm like, so it's happening. We're big.
We're big. We're huge.
We're big time. That's why they can kiss our ass.
Suck at This American Life.
what do we got today?
All right. So... reminder, last reminder that we do have Magic pre-release on Friday, if that kind of thing interests you. We still have spots open. And the Free Comic Book Day is about 2 weeks away.
God, is it just 2 weeks?
It feels like it shouldn't be, but
it's
I think it is.
May 7th.
I thought it was 3 weeks.
It's the 19th, maybe 3 weeks. Anyway.
What's the new Magic set, by the way?
Streets of New Capenna.
Oh, yeah. Magic Mobsters.
Magic Mobsters.
Yes, cool.
So that's coming up. And then we got a couple games this week. I was pretty excited about the stuff we got. Anu Azul, Queen's Garden, which is basically a sort of gardening-themed version of the tile drafting game Azul.
Yeah, Azul's like long since proven its merits.
One of my favorite games.
So, yeah, is it like kind of like a big revision of it, or...?
The basic mechanic of drafting will be the same, but the scoring and all will be different. So
right on.
It's definitely a very different game. I've played all three different Azuls. They're all different enough that basically... You sort of have to relearn them all as different games, but they all have the... If you like one Azul, I think you'll probably like all of them.
Right on.
Also, Canvas, which is a game I played this week.
Oh, yeah, that looks cool.
Super good game. Basically, you're painting. You're doing paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these transparent cards, kind of like Gloom.
Yeah.
That have art elements on them.
You, like, build up the elements of a painting by overlaying
You take any three of these, and it makes a painting, and then you score it based on that. Very cool, and also the box itself has a hanger on the back, so you can hang it like a painting on your wall.
That's delightful.
It's great.
That's a pretty ingenious package.
I played it on last week, and the person I was playing with immediately bought two copies, one for them and one to give away. And several people have asked me if we have it, so yeah, we're out of it right now. We should get a restock on it later this week, and it is definitely going to be one of the games of this year, I think. It's really fun, and super easy to teach, super quick to play. I handed it off to a few people who didn't play a lot of games, and they played it and really enjoyed it, so... Definitely worth a look.
If the store wasn't so busy these days, I'd say you should just bring it in and teach it to us.
Let's
when
play
it's
Canvas right now
when
during
it's
the
quiet.
Podcast.
be like, hang on, I got to look up a rule. Dead air, I understand, is great for radio.
People love dead air. Well, we're always so popular, we can start doing weird experimentation. we're the best. Suck it, Joe Rogan. That one's actually true. Suck it, Joe Rogan.
Wouldn't be completely dead air. There's some shuffling of cards.
Yeah, you'd hear some papers.
Yeah.
Be like, huh. I'm not sure about this. Can you look it up, Nick?
And I will shuffle through the instruction booklet, and then when one of us wins, it'll be like, suck it, Dave.
I'm Canvas. Yay!
I'm Canvas. We also got Flourish, which is a sort of gardening-themed deck builder. Looks super fun.
That's the theme of the week.
Theme of the week.
I like all deck builders.
Yeah, I know. Maybe not deck builder, maybe a card drafting, but it's in the same vein.
Mm. Boo!
But that one I want to try. And then a restoration games. The guys who sort of take new versions of old games. They did like Dark Tower and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a game called Keys of the Kingdom, which is not a game I'm familiar with.
Okay.
But is a new game from them.
Rebranding or rethink of an old game.
Yep.
Okay.
We also got a restock of the Where's Waldo Meets Crime
Micro Macro.
Yes. Both the original and the sequel, essentially.
And I know we've talked about it before, but for those who haven't seen it, it literally you kind of like unfurl a kind of very super detailed drawing of like a cityscape.
Yep.
with lots of tons of little tiny detail on the people, and you will begin zeroing in with your friends, like on finding things, clues which will lead you to other places around the city.
That's fair.
You all kind of work together in that sort of escape room cooperative way.
Yeah.
It's a really, really cool concept.
Yeah, it's a fun game. We all like it. I feel like we've got to restock on a couple things also. Oh, we also got Lockup, which is a role player related. Basically, you're a goblin, bugbear, something kind of gang in a fantasy prison. And you are trying to become the biggest gang before the warden gets there because he's going to pardon someone.
Yeah.
It looked like a really fun game.
This is a board game?
This is a board game.
A board game of fantasy cell block politics.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
That's how I'd brand it. Anyway.
Anyway. So some good games. And we talked about last week.
The bugbear traded me for a pack of cigarettes.
We did get the framework stuff in, and it's very nice.
Oh, right. Yeah, those are the fancy miniatures that are like... You know, all the head and limbs and stuff are customizable and have different faces.
And hopefully this week we'll be getting a kind of a restock of, like, Army Painter stuff.
Yeah, the stuff to make the sprue miniatures.
Yeah, some cutters, some wet palettes, some little magnets.
And on that topic, we're soon to arrive is a new Games Workshop paint reorder.
Yeah.
So we're going to be all nicely stocked on supplies.
And on that topic, the reason we didn't get a chance to read as many comics this week...
Oh, right.
...is because we got a gigantic manga restock. In fact, they accidentally doubled it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a glitch.
But we had some stuff we've never had. Like, we have most of the House Husband on the shelf. We've got Demon Slayer... We've got
a lot of My Hero Academia, by no means all of it,
but a decent chunk.
Much more than we've had in a while.
If you've been looking for some manga, or you know someone who has, we got a big restock.
Send them our way.
Send them our way.
We'll take care of them.
Wait, what? all right, so let's talk about news. There's a couple things. It seems like Netflix is really making use of those extra fees they're charging us now.
Yeah?
For example, Nimona... From one of the creators of Lumberjanes,
yes,
is going to be coming to Netflix as an animated movie.
I don't know a lot about Nimona. Tell me what Nimona's about.
It's a fantasy thing, I think. I've never read it.
Okay, all ages fantasy thing. Mm-hmm. We might think that it will have some influence of the kind of like Lumberjanes, kind of forward thinking, progressive.
I feel like it's going to be for the fans of like Steven Universe and all that kind of stuff.
Adventure Time-ish things. Yeah. But that's cool.
Yeah.
Traditional animated kind of thing,
assume? Yep, I believe so. In the slightly weirder but totally makes sense news, the Oatmeal's Exploding Kittens game, which we sell every week, is being produced by Mike Judge and Greg Daniels from King of the Hill, Parks and Rec.
I saw he was doing a show. I didn't realize it's literally based on Exploding Kittens.
Yep. So it's got a cast that includes Tom Ellis. Isn't that Lucifer?
Yeah.
And Mark Prox, who you might know as the energy vampire from What We Do in the Shadows.
Nice.
Lucy Liu.
Okay.
It's also going to be... The game is going to be on Netflix. I don't know if you guys have done this. Netflix is starting to do these little sort of like... The guys who did Black Mirror did one, that Bandersnatch.
Yeah.
Well, then they did one called Cape... It was some kind of cat...
Is this the heist thing?
Heist thing. The thing is, like, it's a cat and a dog, and it's a cartoon. It's very much a Tex Avery cartoon, but it's like a choose-your-own-adventure thing.
I heard about it, but I didn't...
I watched it.
You told me it did sound fun.
And it is like playing a little video game in sort of the Dragon's Lair style, where you see the different outlets. And this sounds like Exploding Kittens. They may be doing the... It says they're developing a game to play on Netflix. I'm wondering if basically you'll be able to like turn
it. It is actually a game. It's not just some cartoon somehow based on the concepts.
No, so there is a cartoon as well.
Yeah, two different things.
They're also doing the game, so the game will be on Netflix next month, and the series will arrive next year. The show is about the eternal conflict between heaven and hell when God and the devil are sent to earth but in the body of cats.
I'll say this. The Oatmeal is very funny online comic. I assume a lot of people have watched read it, but if you haven't, just go look up any given one.
Oh, man. Tom Ellis is almost certainly playing the devil, isn't he?
Oh.
I mean, he should.
Lucifer, possibly.
I mean, he should.
Might make some sense. But yeah, that sounds fun.
That's fun. Also, let's see, I think that's all the Netflix news, because I don't know who's doing the Ghost of Tsushima. I didn't look to see who it's being developed for.
But that, next-gen game, was it for probably PS4, maybe Xbox One, Ghost of Tsushima, samurai game, like an open-world sort of samurai game, is going to get made into a TV show?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it a TV show?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know. It could be a movie.
It's a movie.
It's a movie. Okay. You know, just real quick, as the person who played it here, I will say, it's a video game movie. It's probably going to go wrong. The writing on the game was above average, I would say. It had an interesting notion where, essentially, you are a sort of a samurai in training who's kind of conflicted on methodology. In game terms, that means that you can either play as a samurai who doesn't do anything dishonorable, or kind of more like a ninja using tactics like explosives, hiding in the shadows, stabbing people from behind. And he's got to kind of weigh the realities of fighting a sort of guerrilla war against these kind of... Not like Genghis Khan, but... But it was like sort of barbarian types you're against.
All right.
And one thing I do remember is that like when you like fight them in their villages, there's like little mini collection games and stuff. A lot of games have these, you know, find different flowers, find to make herbs and things like that. This had a mini game where you would find pieces of art from the enemy, and they would be like real pieces of art from whoever this group is. I can't quite think of. And they actually did try to make them pretty well rounded. Like they weren't literally just thugs and barbarians and stuff.
You played this all the way through, right?
I did. A rare one that I made it all the way through. Really fun gameplay. Like, I super recommend the game to anybody who liked samurai stuff. And there is enough of a hook there to build a movie on, which is to say, a conflicted samurai who's like... I mean, that's a cool concept. A samurai who might be a ninja, too. And I'm sure it's happened before, but probably not in a really sort of mainstream way. That said, I know that there is a long tradition of video game movies sucking, and this one probably will too. That said, I believe, Randy, we have an upcoming story from a person who's doing a video game movie who has some pedigree. So we'll get to that in a second.
Yes. In fact, let's get to it right now.
Okay.
John Wick creator Derek Kolstad, he's one of the creators of it, is adapting Streets of Rage into a movie.
Let me ask, because I kind of forget, is Streets of Rage the old side-scrolling beat-em-up?
Side-scrolling Sega Genesis game. You play Blaze Fielding, Axel Stone, and Adam Hunter.
Oh, man.
Efforts to take down Mr. X and his criminal syndicate were stymied by deep corruption within the department.
There's just no way this works,
In
right?
response, Blaze, Axel, and Adam resign from police force and become vigilantes in order to save their city.
I think you can just keep them from being in the police force at all, probably. And this is one of those ones where you're scrolling along the side view, just like the old Ninja Turtle game or the old X-Men game.
Dave, there's even a bigger tie into this.
Oh?
He also signed on to helm Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah.
Oh.
So he's going to do Ghost of Tsushima, and then he's going to come over to Streets of Rage. This dude is angling to make video game movies good. God bless him for trying.
Then, of course, he's obviously going to do Final Fight and a remake of Double Dragon.
Double Dragon was the original sort of one. That's what I was kind of thinking of in my head.
Final Fight, I think, is the one that I played.
Yeah, so Final Fight was fun.
I think at the very least we can say that he's probably going to know what he's doing on the action scenes in here.
Yep.
He's also a guy who works with some writers that to add a little bit more depth and sort of ideas than you would... That, you know, John Wick could have been like... Just a dumb action movie.
Yep. Yeah.
And instead they kind of built out a world that was kind of a slightly stylized world of Hitman and stuff like that. So...
With well thought through choreographed action sequences.
So he could have a possibility here.
He also did Nobody with Bob Odenkirk, which I've not watched yet, but Nick, I know you liked
it. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Things.
You know what I was thinking? If I was making the Final Fight movie, I'd make it this manic kind of pop thing, kind of like Crank... what's that, Upgrade?
Yeah.
Stuff like that, where it's like almost a little kind of pop and cartoony, a little of that Dick Tracy kind of crazy style.
Yeah.
Larger-than-life characters. And so it's almost like they're in this crazy pop world where, like, old 80s thugs with, like, green mohawks are walking down the street like it's the Warriors or something. They got to do full video game stuff, pick up trash cans and throw it into people, you know, all that, all the power-ups. If not precisely the same, there should be, like, it should be bonkers.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
The only question is, do you go PG-13 violence or do you R-rated violence?
R-rated violence.
Yeah, R-rated.
Probably.
All the people who played Streets of Rage are now in their 40s or 50s.
Yeah. Because I think it needs to be kind of funny, but it also needs to be cool... But The Matrix is an example of, like, really good action sequences. That was a PG-13 movie.
It's true.
Wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Or no,
except
it was
for the full frontal nudity of Morpheus.
I think it's an R-rated movie that, should be PG-13.
Right, it's basically PG-13, but there's probably like one or two things like, oh, that alien went into his tum-tum, that's gross. Or, actually, I guess they're not aliens, it's like a little robot-y thing. Anyway, yeah. You know what I meant.
Anyway, I'm hoping. I'd like to have some
cautiously
hope.
Pessimistic.
Yes.
I'm just asking, where's our Golden Axe movie or TV series?
Where's
our
Altered Beast, Nick?
Where's Ghosts and Goblins?
Sam Esmail, who did Mr. Robot, is adapting the classic Metropolis film.
Yeah.
So this is a sci-fi movie about futuristic dystopia with a massive class divide. Again, I don't know how this is relevant to today's kids.
Yeah, I guess, like, whatever. Class was, like, must have been a thing back then.
Yeah, but now we've solved everything. We live in a post-scarcity society, of course.
Yeah. So here's a weird thing. I've seen a fair number of classic movies, seen a fair number of black and white movies, seen a fair number of silent movies. I've never seen Metropolis.
Yeah.
Just one of the gaps in my film lore.
Well, here's the thing. That premise, I've never seen it either, but that premise, plus Esmail, who did all about hackers versus the system, kind of like the destruct, you know, how screwed up our system was and that kind of thing, seems like a good fit. But what's interesting, they're going to make an 8-part TV adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be they're going to use the virtual production technology they're using on The Mandalorian.
Okay.
So there's just in Australia, they're setting up a big like sound stage.
They're right, they're getting it already.
And when you say virtual production, I immediately think, like, terrible, like...
Right, it's going to look like a video game, like, there's no weight to any of the characters.
But then you say The Mandalorian, and I'm like, oh, okay.
They did it pretty good.
So, if they're going to do this, like, crazy, you know, fully lived-in future world...
Yeah.
And it really gets into sort of class divide and that kind of stuff, it could be good. My only worry is that Mr. Robot kind of disappeared up its own butt.
Uh-huh.
And also, I tried to watch Foundation on Apple Plus... Mm-hmm. And it was boring. And I'm worried this could be boring.
I hear it did pick up. And like, towards the latter half of the season, I heard it got really, really good.
Okay.
So I am meaning to get back to Foundation. Because I liked what I watched.
Okay. I did not. I was very bored.
Yeah.
It was pretty.
I didn't see it.
In the same way, like a very well-maintained guest room bathroom. It's pretty. It's clean. It's shiny. I guess it's pretty in the same way.
I bet they'd be pretty honored at the comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
They look like this could be a Buc-ee's.
They could put that quote on the back of their Blu-ray.
This could be a Buc-ee's.
This show is comparable to a Buc-ee's bathroom.
That would sell like gangbusters. People go nuts for Buc-ee's. Well, I don't understand it.
But, their bathrooms are so clean there. I buy like a little bag of chips. I pour them out on the floor of the bathroom and I eat them off.
And then the robot comes out of the wall and cleans it up. And
that's right.
You pour one out for the homies.
That's right. Pour one out for Buc-ee.
Hold out for the hedgehog. Or whatever he is. He's a gopher?
Gopher?
I think he's a gopher.
He's a gopher.
Yeah.
Pour one out.
Or a beaver. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a beaver. So it's beaver nuggets. That's it.
I have never stepped foot in a Buc-ee's. I don't know.
Really?
Have you really?
No.
Why not?
I don't know. It's too crowded. And I don't want to stop there.
They're actually... Well, I'll say this.
There are lines, and I don't like lines.
I've been a few times, and there's never been a true line.
No.
Like, you park, and it looks like it should be busy, but the place is so vast.
They have fudge and hot nuts.
It encompasses all of them. But really, go for the bathrooms. That's what I'm saying.
Yep. My kid wants, every time we it go is to not Dallas,
as,
wants to stop.
It is not as full-looking as it looks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Walking in there, it's like you've walked into a giant hotel gift shop.
Yes,
that runs on for miles and miles. Sounds the like dream of America.
Sounds like you're telling me you walk into a TARDIS. Every Buc-ee's is a TARDIS.
Every Buc-ee's
giant.
Is a TARDIS.
They are giant. They also have like 800 pumps, I think, in front of them.
I think that's right. The Orville. I think we talked about this, but they finally got a date. It is coming June 2nd to Hulu.
Yeah,
It sounds like the final season. It sounds like everybody's moving on, which is too bad. But
yeah.
I'm going to get one more.
Yeah, three seasons is what Star Trek got. I mean, the original Star Trek.
You still haven't seen season two, right?
Correct.
You should.
Actually, I've seen most of season two, but I haven't finished it.
You should finish it.
The finale, the last few episodes excellent. Are very good.
And I think I brought this up the last time we talked about this, which is that the comic that they did when right before I think the pandemic hit and delayed everything, the comic that I think would have like bridged the gap to the Hulu stuff.
Yeah.
Had swearing in it. What? And I was like, yeah, they F-bomb. I'm talking about the F-bomb. It was in there. And I'm like, does that mean the Hulu series is cutting loose? And I think it probably is.
Probably will.
So finally we'll get to see Captain...
Mercer.
Mercer drop the F-bomb. Yeah. They'd be like, fuck these aliens.
Pew! Final bit of news this week. We got the Thor Love and Thunder teaser.
Oh, yeah. To the tunes of Guns N' Roses.
Sweet Child of Mine?
Sweet Child, yeah.
I have seen every lesbian friend I have in the world talking about how this movie is made for lesbians.
Yes.
Because of Queen Valkyrie and Natalie Portman Thor.
Yeah.
And Natalie Portman Thor looks great, by the
way.
She
does.
Yeah. It's in the little
only
teaser.
Only glimpsed. It's like at a glance, the movie. Randy, did you see what I meant when I said it looked like it could be stuff that might be from just like the first 15 minutes?
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's mostly Thor kind of, it's about him kind of being a traditional Thor,
yep.
Directionless, kind of in the wake of all these things that have happened, trying to figure out who he is.
Yeah, getting his bod back.
Still hanging with the Guardians of the Galaxy.
the bit with the Guardians where he's like, he keeps getting in the line of sight for Star-Lord.
Staring completely alive.
The Guardians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why are you staring at me?
it's pretty funny. It's definitely, like, you can kind of feel like Taika Waititi, like with Thor Ragnarok, mm-hmm. is bringing that sort of pop sort of vibe to it, as if the Guns N' Roses song and the 80s style glam metal graphics, yep. like the titling is like an 80s Motley Crue font. What else is in there? The Greek gods.
The Greek gods. We see Zeus.
Yeah, kind of only glimpsed, but he's holding thunderbolts.
But they look like they're in. They look like they're in Olympia or something.
I think
Russell Crowe is Zeus. It'll be fun.
Oh, is Russell Crowe Zeus. Nice.
Yeah. There was also, as somebody pointed out, there's a brief glimpse of a scene where there's this giant, kind of looks like it could be like some alien or some giant mythical monster that's dead with a Thor silhouetted looking at its, I mean, it's giant, it is yeah. vast, that is like almost a direct recreation of the artist Asad Ribic's art.
Yeah.
To the point where a friend of mine was like, Marvel should really probably be paying this guy more than whatever they're probably paying him.
Yeah.
But it looked cool. Cemented, I think, the links to who's the writer? Jason Aaron.
Yeah.
Jason Aaron's run.
Yeah.
And indeed, that is the threat, right? This is
yeah. We know Christian
thing.
Christian Bale playing the God Butcher.
Is he?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. Do we think Zeus is gonna, or one of those guys is gonna get taken down?
Zeus might get. I mean, they don't need Zeus.
Yeah, he has
I mean, I hope they don't like outright just have them show up for 5 minutes and then get killed.
I mean, that would be a pretty threat.
That's a pretty good cold open, I think.
Yeah. But it would have been the first time we would have seen the.
Well, it could also be that like several of the gods, like if like Hercules is stuff of there and he and Thor like brawling and drinking or something like that.
And then they kill him. I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, you got to kill your precious babies.
You should prepare
to the
for that.
No, Hercules is amazing, and don't.
But here's the thing: I think if they're like, we already got Thor, we don't need Hercules.
They're also gods, so you know.
Yeah, you guys bring him back.
Chris Hemsworth might not want to do a fifth Thor film.
I think Chris Hemsworth might be Thor forever.
I suspect that like he might be visiting Olympus or something when the God Butcher strikes, yeah. or Hercules is like, Zeus, Father, come look at how watch me best this mortal, and he'll be like, Zeus, and then they go and he's just blood everywhere.
And Zeus will be like, I can't come, I'm being murdered by the God Butcher.
Who is the God Butcher, Zeus?
Verbatim. Word for word.
The dialogue was a little weak.
Somehow we got the script for Thor Love and Thunder.
That's going to play out exactly like that.
Zeus did exposition for about 5 minutes giving his origin.
And then Thor will be like, Hercules, what did your father say? And then Hercules repeat it all to make sure people understand.
And it'll be like
like the scene in Crocodile Dundee at the end with at the airport.
Yes. And a CGI Brian Blessed as Hercules.
Oh.
And then Voltan shows up.
So my friend Father, he was telling me last night about the basic concept of the God Butcher behind the scenes, and I was like, oh, I don't want to blab it because people may not know, and it might be fun to discover.
Yep.
But I was like, oh, that is actually a pretty neat premise. Like, I feel like the themes and stuff, even though I'm sure they're going to make it their own and change it up a bit, I feel like the themes are actually potent and interesting in there. He has the potential to be a nuanced bad guy and not just an Oscar Isaac as Apocalypse bad guy.
Oof.
Why would
you even say that?
We pray for that, but you never know. We could get... who's the Doctor Who guy from Thor?
Christopher Eccleston.
Christopher Eccleston is...
Malekith.
Malekith, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Taika Waititi wouldn't let that happen.
Right. And so I think that we'll be at least safe. He's going to make it interesting, even if you might be like, well, that was a little bit much, actually. but, yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 20th. Oh, it's 4/20.
Okay.
That's well, why the Secret History of the War on Weed came out.
Yeah. Well, after y'all come down from your crazy high, then listen to the podcast again and it'll make more sense.
That's
not
right.
A whole lot of sense, but a little bit more.
That's right. We're the highest podcaster, too. Suck it, Joe Rogan.
Well, I don't
We're
know
probably
that.
Not higher no. than his podcast.
No, no one ever has been. But, oh, there,
but
that
should we open with that one?
Yeah, Image has a book called The Secret History of War on Weed. It is a one-shot made by Jerry Duggan, Brian Posehn, and Scott Koblish, the Deadpool team.
Yeah.
I thought, based on the title, that it was going to be like a history of the, you know, like the actual war on weed, which is a thing.
Right.
But no, it starts off, and they're like, they basically start with a caption that says, "Happy 420, enjoy it. Unless you're celebrating Hitler's birthday, in which case you can go fuck yourself to death." And then, on page 3, in the 80s, there's a super soldier fighting a dinosaur man in the jungle.
Yep. I will say, the sort of premise, which I'm going to like very lightly spoil here, is that this guy who is like a... Everybody remembers... who was the guy who fought Daredevil?
Nuke.
Nuke, yeah.
He's kind of like Nuke from Daredevil. The evil Captain America. Mercenary who, like, knocks over third world countries. He's doing the bidding of the government, including knocking over, like, weed, like, I don't know, farmers or
he
something like that.
He goes on a rampage against a bunch of hippie weed farmers.
But I think, I don't know if it's, like, when he's burning their crops or something like that he gets, like, a massive dose, basically.
Yep.
And he becomes enlightened. He becomes an enlightened, like, Rambo. Anyway, yes. It is ridiculous. It's kind of the kind of thing you would expect from the Deadpool team.
Yeah.
There's a crossword puzzle in the back for people who are high, just has like gibberish in it, just random gibberish, like
that's
in their activity
so,
page.
That's so mean.
Anyway, it's kind of funny though.
So if you like weed, there's a comic that you can get high.
Or if you're straight edge and you just want to like experience vicariously the weirdness of this particular comic.
Yep. Speaking of super soldiers and weed, Captain America is out this week.
I don't think Cap would appreciate that
there. There's no weed that I can see in this comic.
Cap hasn't so much as tried a cigarette.
Anyway, this is Captain America number 0. It is it's Sam and Steve teaming up against Arnim Zola. It's got some really pretty painted art. Is this Daniel Acuna?
No.
Is it not?
It's a new guy.
No, he's new. Guy. He actually reminded me a little bit of... Who's that guy who did the Punisher... when maybe Rick Remender was doing Punisher? Who did the painted art on that?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Not him, but a little bit in that ballpark, too. If I could say his name, I would.
But
kind of that realistic painted art look. Am I correct that this is leading into one ongoing, two ongoing?
Two ongoing. So this is number 0.
There's a
and
Sam.
And then there's going to be a Sam Wilson Captain America and a Steve Rogers Captain America.
Yeah, notably, this is very much playing up. These guys are running side by side, no replacements. They're both sort of on equal playing field.
Yeah.
And there's like a big Arnim Zola sort of storyline to kick it off.
Dark Press has a book called The Collector Unit 731. Which, unless there's a twist that I just don't see coming, it seems to be a pretty straight story of a Japanese camp in World War II where they're experimenting on prisoners with disease. I can't quite get
a
sense.
Do you mean
a
camp in Japan or a Japanese internment camp in America?
No, it's a Japanese a camp in Japan.
Okay.
It's a Japanese camp for Canadian American English war criminals. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in Tokyo. There is a second printing of Punisher number 1. If you missed out on that.
Yeah.
That's the story that had we talked about it extensively with featuring Punisher and the Hand and the possible return of some of Punisher's loved ones.
All right. Also, I forgot Vampire Slayers this week, which is the new Buffy. I believe she has like she has amnesia, so like she knows she's the Slayer, but she doesn't know she's Buffy.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a new thing from Boom.
I only flipped through that one just to see what it looked like, and I was like, oh, this is art is really very nice. Boom has a good stable of artists, so...
Most importantly on this week, it is Nightwing week.
It's true.
Nightwing 91, which is the second part of his... not a crossover with Flash, because it's just Flash is in it. It's not done a crossover with Flash book. But Nightwing and Flash have a long-standing friendship. It's done really well, as you expect with Tom Taylor. There's some really good guest art. This is just a fantastic issue. I think we all loved it.
Yep. In the same vein, I would also... I really like the second issue of Mark Waid's Batman Superman World's Finest.
Yeah.
Which has them continuing to work with the Doom Patrol and a sort of sprawling... it reminds me of back when... Actually, when Mark Waid did the... what was it? Brave and the Bold comic years back, like 10 years ago.
Plus,
and the kind of like jumping around throughout with DC as a playground. There's a neat thing there. Like, Superman has this like red kryptonite crystals in his blood that's like like hundreds of them or whatever.
Yeah.
And like Niles Calder from the Doom Patrol. Like, there's a neat thing where he sends Negative Man through, since Negative Man's powers are radiation based, to like, I don't know, like hyper accelerate them, and like so that the radioactivity decays hyper fast, and
that's
before
cool.
it gets to his heart. And I'm like, there are some cool ideas and stuff in there. And it continues to have art from who's the
Dan Mora.
Dan Mora, yeah.
There's also a new issue of Nice House in the Lake, which continues the second half of that story, and the final issue of Catwoman Lonely City by Cliff Chang, which I haven't had a chance to read yet. But,
I need to catch up on, because y'all told me that was...
It's really good.
We kind of were like, I don't know about this. But sort of like the one that they did with Flash's Rogues, like, that ended up being surprisingly good, and so it seems with this Catwoman one.
Also, last week we talked about Sandman Book 1. They rushed these out. Sandman Book 2 is out this week. This is issues 21 through 37, Sandman Special and Vertigo Winter's Edge number 1 through 3, and includes Season of the Mists, which is my personal favorite Sandman arc.
So each one of these is roughly the equivalent of three graphic novels or so.
Yeah, pretty much.
But they're also probably changing it up a little bit, because it sounds like they're including some extra stuff that might not have been in the original collection.
Yes, it also has a Game of You, which is the one about the woman that's sort of a Alice in Wonderland kind of thing. This is really good stuff. And then they've got a bunch of short stories that came from different anthologies. Yeah, continues to be just really good stuff.
Yeah.
It's a good volume. You were saying, Dave, that you were like, this is like $35 for... it's like $1 an issue, essentially.
$10 for a trade paperback of like one of the most legendary series there is, with lots of legendary artists working on it. I feel like if you are a person who's read Sandman but maybe has some gaps in your collection, this is a really gorgeous way to get some nice big collections and fill in those gaps, you know, in big volumes. And if you're new to Sandman, well then yeah, you've got like probably the best way to collected versions to date.
And then there's the RPG we got this week.
Which is a Marvel-themed?
The Marvel Multiverse Role-Playing Game Playtest Rulebook. It's a little $10, like, graphic novel-sized.
That'd be the equivalent of, like, the Player's Handbook. It's like the starter set for the Marvel game, with all the basic rules and, a starter adventure?
A little starter adventure. It is the playtest, so it doesn't have the full characters, but it has most of the Avengers statted out in here, and then also rules for making your own character.
Yeah.
It's got a system. The guy, I was going to look this up, who the person is. You all vamp for a minute while I look up who this person is.
Sure.
Sure.
I got nothing. No,
you guys both looked at this.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I thought the art selections were really cool.
The art selections are really cool. It actually does cover a lot of different heroes, you know. You can, make a custom character or use a Marvel character. It uses just six-sided dice. So the dice system is relatively simple. You roll 3d6s. They call it the 616 system because they're being a little bit cute about it.
Yeah.
But it's the basic concepts behind it are quite simple to get a hold of. And as kind of just an interesting marketing thing, it's very fitting since it is in the format of like a thick comic, like a comic with a spine to it, but it is kind of comic book format. Is that there are actually variant covers. There's three different covers, I think, for it. One of which, the one that you were looking at, Nick, is a really nice one from Peach Momoko.
Yep, Scarlet Witch.
And she's levitating some, like, dice. It's cool looking.
Okay, so this guy worked on Deadlands, Tales from the Loop, and, weirdly, the Wildstorms expandable superhero card game, which is, about the time of Magic, there was a Wildstorms card game.
Yeah. Deep cut.
He also worked on the Marvel Encyclopedia, so he clearly has a lot of love for this stuff.
I noticed when I was reading it that they were talking about how you can play in like different Marvel settings, that you know the 616 universe could be, you know, is probably the most likely one, but I think they wanted to very much play up like if you want to go into the multiverse, like in Spider-Man's Into the Spider-Verse, or maybe if you want to do like Ultimate Spider-Man or any of the other Ultimate characters, you could do that.
Yep.
They basically say like, you know, that door is open.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, $10 for a full-on role-playing game is a pretty good deal. The actual... They're going to make a hardcover in 2023 that's going to have, like, everything, more villains, more powers, all that kind of stuff. But if you want to get a sense of it and, like, give your feedback on the role, on the rules,
yeah,
this is a good way to do it. I read through some of this last night. The 616 thing is interesting. It's actually kind of a fun mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they do this, instead you have a challenge rating, and instead of, like, you roll dice and add your skill,
yeah,
you subtract your skill from the challenge rating, and that's what sets the difficulty level. Oh, so okay. That was interesting. So it's a fun idea. So
it's interesting they put Miles Morales in here, but not Peter.
Oh, Peter's in the front.
He's their sample
he's
hero.
Their example.
Oh, he's there. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he is. He did make the cut. And also, like, their power thing is like it's a little chart, kind of like a video game. Like, you power up and you have choices, and you can sort of, like, each power set, like, you can add things on.
Yeah.
So, kind of cool. All right. I think, that's it for comics for the week, I think. We're going to come back in a second and talk about some movies.
And, Nick, you should talk about the book Horror Store.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to start with, Dave, your war movie trilogy.
Yeah, it's a retro war movie trilogy, spanning times and styles.
What got you on this?
I don't know. The war in Ukraine.
Wow. Okay, topical.
I was like, you know what? I need some entertainment.
Ares, the god of war, came to Dave, and he was like, you want to watch some movies?
I brought a pizza.
I actually do think there was because I started with Starship Troopers. That's going to be my first one. And something specifically led me to that. It could even have been as simple as we were quoting it in the store one day.
I mean, we often do that.
I quote that, like, the bugs laid a trap for us, and some of it's very deliberately hokey dialogue.
I'm a huge fan of Real Johnny Rico, Digital Johnny Rico.
Yes, and for people who don't know that requires you to have the DVD or Blu-ray or whatever and watch Paul Verhoeven's amazing commentary on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a madman, in case you didn't know, but, like, I would say a genius madman.
Yes.
You're talking about this movie, and I think I bought a 4K version of this, and I haven't watched it.
Oh, man. Well, I recommend. So I think at this point, when Starship Troopers came out in, late 90s, a lot of people just thought it was the actual gung-ho thing. It appeared to be from the trailers with, was it Blur's song number two, song number four, yeah. song yeah. number whatever.
Yes, that's correct.
In the trailer, the woohoo song.
Yep.
Which, in retrospect, is very clever. Like, it almost makes the movie more subversive that people thought it was what it was parodying.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, for those of you who have dug a little bit deeper, read a little bit on it, or just picked up on it, this movie is very satirical and is really meant to satirize the nature of war machine and, old people disfiguring kids in their wars.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a reason that Neil Patrick Harris is wearing a basically Nazi uniform at the end, right down to, like, the leather coat and everything that, and the cap.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I need to say a lot about the premise. It is, however, based on a Robert Heinlein story, which is absolutely straight-edge, pro-military. It depicts a world where you can't vote. You're not a full citizen unless you serve in the military. Yeah. And I think he was like, this is my utopia.
I still like that book. I don't.
You know, I do too, but I was rereading it the other day.
I haven't reread it in years.
And like, it has one of the great opening chapters, to be honest, I think, which is one of their drops where he's in the mech suit thing before people really had even conceived of mech suits in any serious way.
Yeah.
And there's, like, all this detail about how the banking maneuvers and stuff in space to drop the pods right, so they burn up right in the atmosphere. Tons of cool detail. But also, the aliens that they're fighting there, which are not the arachnids, it's the other ones they call the skinnies, some sort of skinny humanoid aliens. He's, like, going through, and it's just a smash, an operation in the book to put instill fear. They just want to, like, blow some stuff up, terrorize them, and let them know that they could do more if they wanted to. And he kills several people along the way, just hits them with a flamethrower thing, drops microatomics on them and stuff like that. Yeah. And then, like, at no point is anything... I think throughout the whole book, made of the ideology or anything of these guys, they're just who they're fighting.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is border, I mean, not borderline, that's like probably immoral to like just have a tell a war story with not even a thought as to why you're at war. And that's why I'm not so sure I can, because I always liked it too, but
Paul Verhoeven was like, hold my beer.
He's like, I will rethink this and make it into something that appeals to me. And it appeals to, like if you've watched RoboCop, it has those same qualities, which is to say,
Paul Verhoeven has not made a ton of great movies, but he's...
I think he's made a ton of great movies. They just happen to be of a certain style.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got at least three. Like,
he's got three.
RoboCop, Starship Troopers, what's the other one? There's another one in there. I'm not going to give him Basic Instinct. No, that's not going to count. Look it up for me, Nick. There's one I'm forgetting. I'm not going to count Hollow Man.
No, you should not count that.
He does have some shit movies, but I feel like there's at least one more.
There was another one,
there's at least one more bit of violent fare out there.
When he also plays Showgirls. No. Oh, Total Recall.
Total Recall.
Total Recall.
Very good movies. He makes hyper violent movies, which have also some big laughs in them usually, and almost always a satirical element. Maybe not with Total Recall. But anyway, don't want to get tongue up too long on Starship Troopers. But revisiting it, it is a ton of fun. These sort of vapid teen actors, or like 20-something actors, like Denise Richards and
Casper Van Dien.
Who plays Casper Van Dien, is all really rather deliberate. Her kind of vacancy and his sort of vacancy and chasing each other off to war because he's in love with her and she's just career minded and all
Michael this. Ironside must love working with Paul Verhoeven though.
Michael Ironside and Clancy Brown are both get to be great drill instructor type characters.
And is it not Barry Pepper? It's the other one that I always.
It's Jake Busey.
Jake Busey
is kind of his buddy, and it's also got who's the redhead girl?
Oh, Dina Meyer
played
Oracle.
Yeah, who basically he chases Denise Richards' character enlisting, and she chases him. Yeah. Yep. Along the way, there actually is some stuff that's like, oh, this is pretty forward-thinking, things that were elements, at least, of the original Highland story, which is to say, like, an integrated gender military with, like, a co-ed shower scene, which, you know, both is lurid in the traditional Verhoeven sense, but is also, like, the shower scene isn't about sex. The guy who wants to be a reporter is like, hey, everybody, let's all talk about why we joined. Oh, somebody's like, I want to have kids, and like, it's easier to get like a license to have kids if you're a citizen. Yeah. And somebody is like, I want to get into politics. And so it's actually like a real conversation had while you're looking at tits.
So what was the second military movie?
Second military movie is moving on to the serious stuff. I actually think I watched it, not because I actually didn't intend to be like, I'm going to watch more movies. But I think I was looking at if you liked this, you might watch, or more movies like this.
Yeah.
I ended up watching the very serious Full Metal Jacket.
I haven't seen that in at least a decade.
So here's what I'm gonna say about Full Metal Jacket. I think it might be the best war movie.
It's.
If you can tell me one that's better, then do it.
As a kid, I think it. I think my dad in particular was always like Platoon was better than Full Metal Jacket. I think enjoyment is a different thing to say, but I think Full Metal Jacket is more enjoyable.
It's watchable or maybe like that. Yeah. I'll say this: Platoon, I think, is one of the ones that would have a shot at the title.
Yeah, I recently rewatched Platoon like last year or something for the first time in like 20 years, and I did have a better time with it. I had a better understanding. But
these are some complicated and dark movies to see when you're young.
Yes,
and I think honestly, I think Full Metal Jacket is like kind of meaner in its way.
It is.
Whereas Platoon, and this is maybe why I feel like it feels a bit more real and why I like it just a touch more, and I actually love Platoon, though. Charlie Sheen's character in Platoon is a guy who's like, he's basically the good, idealistic American kid, I think basically based on Oliver Stone when he was enlisted.
Right.
He volunteered. Who went to Vietnam and had his illusions shattered, but tried to do the right thing throughout. Well, Joker, who's the lead character in Full Metal Jacket, with its very memorable opening training sequence, literally probably the first half hour of the movie, is Arlie Ermey taking the screen by storm with the most terrifying drill instructor of all time.
Yep.
Who every time I've ever watched clips of it, by the way, on YouTube, I'm always a little terrified to see in the comments people who are like from the military that are like, he was a great instructor. Oh, that's exactly how it is. That's how it should be. Oh, he's making men of them. You know, well, and I'm like, oh no.
The person who was like the drill instructor to put the people in Full Metal or in platoon like through their ranks, because I did a deep dive on sort of behind
this is like
the
you're
scenes.
Talking behind the scenes where they actually trained them.
They actually trained. They were
was it hardcore.
It was super hardcore, like in the jungle, kind of.
Yeah.
It was messed up.
Oh,
and
wow.
The guy was pretty super hardcore.
Who told the story?
Like
Charlie Sheen or some other actors?
No, it was just, I was listening to like one of the, I forget one of the podcasts.
But basically
I
they put
to.
The actors through a boot camp.
Yes. And when they died and like on the screen, like their character died, they left. They were kicked off of the set. And basically you as another actor had to like, mourn that loss because they were no longer on set.
Well, that's an interesting philosophical notion. That must have been come from Oliver Stone,
it
I
was.
Guess. Huh. Well, yeah, so Full Metal Jacket, you've got Joker who's like kind of a wise ass who kind of stands up a little bit to Arlie Ermey and gets his ass beat for it, but Ermey basically ends up giving him, like putting him as the like squad leader for training, and he ends up as a journalist. And the rest of the movie is seen through his eyes, and he sees a lot of bad shit.
Yeah.
And although he's kind of has that brings that cynical sense of humor to whenever he's talking with somebody, there's no point where like Charlie Sheen, you remember, he like calls it out.
Yeah,
like he's some guys are about to rape somebody, he tries to stop them. Joker doesn't really do that, and in that sense, I feel unfortunately it's more real.
Yeah,
there's a person like
it's really well played by Matthew Modine.
He's great. He's great. They meet, so he runs into another. Platoon, and they have like a dead Vietnamese soldier that they've propped up on with a hat over his over him, and like oh, and there's also the God, the dude who played in Firefly, who played the heavy.
Oh, Adam Baldwin.
Right.
Yeah, he's
Adam Baldwin
there.
Is in this yeah. as a kind of lunk-headed, kill happy monster, probably closer to the real Adam Baldwin.
I was gonna say.
But like I guess to like
cast,
to weirdly to give him his due in the thing they make out that he's effective, and like when one of his teammates gets it's shot, he will like kind of go through hell to get them. So they do show that there's this, you know, there's the intense bonding that that training is meant to give them, but it's monstrous.
As far as cast go, it's not like it's got a lot of character actors, but for
not,
the most
not
part,
super star studded. Yeah,
I mean Vincent D'Onofrio of course plays. I can't remember his name.
Private Pyle.
Private Pyle.
Yeah. That is to say, I don't remember his real name. He calls him Gomer Pyle. And D'Onofrio is great in it. Like, it's like one of those roles that's like kind of so awful. He's basically the overweight guy put through hell in the boot camp, and like beaten by his own soldiers when Arlie Ermey scapegoats him and stuff. And then we'll then goes on to rather satisfyingly shoot Arlie Ermey, unfortunately also himself.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning. By the way, also a lot of like all these war movies have good music in them, at least the Vietnam ones.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of good music in this, including what is it? The Bird Is the Word song.
Oh wow.
Who Family Guy followers may also know from Family Guy. but anyway, I think it's the best. I think it's near flawless. It has a ton of interesting scenes in it. And I was mainly watching actually not for the boot camp scenes, which are super fascinating, but for all the stuff I'd kind of forgotten about what happens later, which is all really well handled and interesting in different ways. There's like a little soliloquy where somebody's died and they're all sort of talking while they like sort of pay their respects, but the conversations that they have about it are go to the side and talk about a bunch of other stuff. Anyway, I closed it out with Saving Private Ryan, another heavy one, another one of these 3-hour type movies. And if that's another one I hadn't watched in a long time. That's another one where also people remember the opening most of all.
Well,
had a level of intensity with its D-Day sequence that hadn't been really seen before on film. Certainly not with the kind of budget and reality that Steven Spielberg and all his team brought to it. I know they had like a cinematographer who I think won best Oscar for best cinematography that year.
It also spawned what Band of Brothers and
for sure Band of Brothers is heavily
which
I mean,
was
Tom Hanks
arguably the deeper story to tell and based in reality. But Saving Private Ryan has a good premise. I think people know it by now. But basically, during the operations on D-Day, you know, I believe the biggest single operation in World War II from the Allies, maybe in history.
Yeah.
Like, it is just a massive undertaking. A private who has three other brothers in the war. They are all killed in separate battles and stuff like that, except for him. And it's, like, so egregious that a squad led by Tom Hanks is sent to kind of find him amidst the chaos of the various people, you know, during the D-Day invasion, a few days into it, to bring him home so that his mom, this kid's parent, his mom, doesn't lose all her kids.
Well, right. Yeah, so the entire family isn't wiped out by World War II.
Right,
yeah.
Right, to give it to at least one. And the movie asks this question throughout, like, as, like, the you know, when they lose their first trooper, yeah. Like, is like, oh, is it worth losing one or more or all of their troops to save one guy? And they have to struggle with it throughout. And Matt Damon ends up playing it when they finally find him. And he doesn't want to, he's like, no, it's not worth it. He's yeah. like, not only that, I'm not leaving my platoon.
Yep.
He's like, these guys are the last brothers I have left now.
Yeah.
There's a ton of people in this movie that you might have forgotten. Everything from, Sam Malone.
I had it. You said Sam Malone.
Good Place.
Yep. Ted Danson.
Ted Danson plays a captain, I think, or some sort of high-ranking officer that they run into at one point.
The main crew is, like, stacked. It's like Vin Diesel.
Yeah, Vin Diesel.
Giovanna Ribisi, Tom Sizemore.
You'll also briefly see
the guy from Lost, which I can never remember his name.
Which guy from Lost?
The mathematician.
Oh, Jeremy yeah. Davies.
He's Jeremy the
Davies.
Translator who kind of becomes like kind of falls into this cowardly sort
he's
of thing.
He's the one who sort of doesn't want to kill the.
Oh right, yeah.
He's
the German
yeah.
soldier.
That's right. Right, yeah.
Right.
And also Barry Pepper is their sniper.
Yep. Oh yeah. And he's very memorable, quoting like the Bible while he snipes. Vin Diesel gets killed trying to. There's like a French family trying to. They're like, please take our little girl to the nearest safe place. This city is being wrecked. And when he tries to do it, he gets shot.
I think there are... Saving Private Ryan, of course that opening is insane and amazing. But I think it's the smaller stuff, the character stuff. Like, when they're... Like sitting around a campfire, and they're
like
all
in
sort
a burnt
of taking,
out church talking, late
but also
at night.
Like taking bets on what Tom Hanks's character did in the real world, as opposed to
nobody knows what his job was,
right? And honestly, Tom Hanks is phenomenal.
He's an interesting kind of leader because he's like sort of does the what I would think of as kind of the Jimmy Stewart style, which is say he leads quietly. He's not an in your face guy. That said, it is still a rated R movie, and you will get to see Tom Hanks drop the F bomb, which is kind of a rarity.
Yeah. And then the final sort of the bridge sequence stuff is
if you ever wanted to get a sense for like how scary a tank would be if you are infantry. That sequence that will do it.
Yeah.
They really like you see the ground shaking and the sand around them, kind of like from the vibrations of these big tanks rolling through, and you're like, oh, they're fucked. they are in terrible place.
Like Panzer tanks.
Yeah, or maybe are they Tigers? I don't know. This is out of my field. But there is a thing where they're like their guy who comes back and reports. He's like, there's like it's like three tanks coming through. And like 50 soldiers, and they've got like I don't know 20 people. It seems like, and like there's just no way. But they do, they have prepped, and they have a what is a good plan. That of course, the saying goes, no plan survives contact with the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It immediately goes awry, and I'd forgotten the rather dark ending.
Yeah.
I guess spoiler warning: pretty much everybody in the platoon dies saving this kid,
except for Ryan. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit, yeah, I had forgotten. Which is why I sometimes like to put some time between movies and let them breathe, so I do kind of experience it.
I will say, that's a pretty good triptych of war movies. It's a snapshot of...
Yeah, all of them, all the best war movies are anti-war movies, I think. And, it was actually, it was a good experience. I recommend all of them. For differing reasons.
Yeah.
What else are we going to talk about?
Next up was Nick talking about Horror Store.
Yeah. So this is a horror novel. I haven't been reading novels. I used to just, like, read things like crazy. And I think Randy can attest to the... He did it as well. You read tons of novels.
It's been a long time since I was that guy. But yes, I used to read novels.
But I think...
Do we think it's, like, social media and internet stuff like that?
I mean, I will agree with that. And the pandemic and... all kind of like shortened attention span.
I blame Dave.
I mean, Dave is probably good, but Dave gave me this book to read.
Which Dave?
All Dave.
All Dave. So,
and across the multiverse, every Dave there is. So he's responsible for me not reading anymore.
So this is a book called Horror Store. It's written by Grady Hendrix.
And we should quick say Horror Store is spelled with horror, S-T-O-R, with a little umlaut over the O.
Yeah.
Like the kind of umlauts you see at IKEA, which is because...
Because this is a book that takes place at a knockoff IKEA store called Orsk.
Right. It might as well be IKEA, though.
But they outright say we are the bargain basement IKEA in like one of the chapters. Each chapter is kind of announced by one of their furniture...
It looks like the instructions or like the little sort of graphic that you would get of the finished thing. And it has a little description under it.
It's available in these kind of colors. And as it progresses through things...
They get
kind of
disturbing and weird.
They are, because this... It's kind
It'll be like a torture cabinet or like a dental chair or something like that.
It gets dark, but it opens up with basically a...
Who's our lead?
Her name is Amy... and she is a person who works in one of the departments. She is kind of a I clock in, I clock out. This is a job. There's nothing more.
Kind of a small town, right?
She was at another Orsk, and she got transferred to this one because this one opened.
Oh yeah.
And weird things are starting to happen at night. Lots of things are broken. There's some stuff that gets vandalized.
Weird, stains and stuff on the couches, as I recall. And they think someone's breaking in, or at least the kind of straight edge sort of, what is he, the store director or the store manager?
It's like co-manager or something. Not quite the head, but just under.
Yeah.
He devised a thing to stay after hours and sort of do patrols and find the person who's doing this.
Yeah, like get to call the police and bust him.
And he kind of ropes Amy in because she needs money and she... gets offered time or double pay and a few other people show up.
Like, she is burning out. Like, she is like hating her job, as I recall.
Well, she's sort of like stagnant in life in a lot of ways. She doesn't want to move back in with her parents, but if she doesn't have this money, she's going to have to. And it's kind of quiet.
There's a few other people in there. There's like, are there some? Is there a couple that wants to be like ghost hunters or something?
Yes, there are two. Those two, Amy and someone else, gets roped in by the manager to sort of run kind of interference and try to find whoever's doing this. During that same night, they find that two other employees have already shown up and are setting up like EMF cameras and all this other.
Right.
Because they think that it's inhabited by a ghost. And they want to be on a TV show, but not on A&E. They want to be on Bravo with all the Real Housewives to make a real impact.
There's also like a somewhat older lady, like sort of middle-aged lady, who's like kind of like a sweet lady.
Yeah, she's the one who gets roped in with Amy. She's like the nicest person. Nice,
yeah, like hugs for everyone. And
but
stuff.
She's got like a weird Harley Davidson thing on her. A sticker on her car, and there are some things about her that are a little odd.
Right. Everybody in this is a little bit of an oddball.
I mean, it really kind of spoke.
Relatable.
It kind of spoke to me because, I mean, I've worked retail all my life for the most part.
Yeah.
And I can.
There's a good head for that.
I completely understand kind of going through the motions and.
Yeah. We do it every day.
We do. saying the same things and checking people out and
but what they do is like this one, you know, in addition to being relatable on that level, there, you know, the IKEA thing, the shopping experience, even if you've only ever been to an IKEA, or even really just any big department store,
yeah,
the kind of maze-like, labyrinthine nature of it, they turn it to that horror thing after a time, and they definitely, like, kind of, like, interlink, I would say, sort of the voraciousness of, like, kind of capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
Which the kind of some of the horror that's going on.
Yeah, they built it like a maze, so they kind of engender more sales.
Yep.
And you're more likely to keep buying stuff if you can't escape.
Yeah. As I recall, Nick, it's been a little while since I've read this, but I have, like, I actually bought this a few times and lent it out a few times, and it's, like, disappeared once or twice, which is why I've had to buy it a few times.
Yeah.
But it's, like, it's a very kind of pop, good, quick pop horror book. I believe you read it in one night.
I did.
And,
Well, I mean, I've never read any Grady Hendrix, and he's kind of a pretty good amount of things.
I think
And he does have a good voice for just character-wise, and the kind of malevolent evilness that kind of shows up is disturbing.
It is.
I mean, I was expecting weirdly zombies. I don't know why.
For some reason you were thinking that, you told me.
But
it is not zombies.
A haunted IKEA goes to some places I was never expecting. And there were scenes in here that will probably stick with me for a while.
Yeah.
Which I was impressed with because good horror gets under your skin a little bit.
That claustrophobic stuff near the end, like what I'm talking about.
There's this chair in particular the main character gets strapped to that I was like, oh.
Yeah, that was pretty horrific. I also remember I liked the slow burn build-up where there's, like, as I recall, there's just some weird little things going on, like, in break rooms or the staff refrigerator or something like that. I forget. But I was just
graffiti,
like,
graffiti on walls.
Yeah, that's like, oh, this could almost be normal, but it's getting just weird enough that it's kind of cool too. Like, cool, creepy.
I can certainly see Hollywood making this Jason Blum. I don't know why you haven't picked this up yet.
Yeah,
because it's perfect
for an
hour and 45 minute horror movie.
Yeah. But in the meantime, I think people should just check out the book.
Oh, very much. If you like horror, you should watch, or you should read this.
And the dude's name is Grady Hendrix. She might have, he's got a few other kind of things. And I feel like he's, like, kind of like pop horror.
Yeah.
But it's also, there is some depth to it. I started reading his second book, My Best Friend's Exorcism.
Yeah.
And there's some depth of character there. It felt like a little bit more like it might have been culled from his own childhood or something like that.
Yeah, the one I want to read is the Southern Book Club's Guide to Killing Vampires. It sounds like that's a tremendous title.
Yeah. All right, do we want to break and then talk about...
We're going to pause, kick Nick out, and talk about Everything Everywhere All at Once. All right, Nick has been vacated from the room.
Now we can speak the terrible secrets.
And speak of the multiverse.
So I was interested in this movie as far back as, like, the first trailer, maybe 6 months ago that I saw. It was interesting because it, like, had Michelle Yeoh in it. Everybody loves Michelle Yeoh.
Yep.
I think most people know her, but she was, like, she was a martial artist in, like, some Jackie Chan movies and other martial arts movies in the 90s.
Yep. She was in a Bond movie?
She was in a Bond movie. Yep. She was the female lead in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon alongside Chow Yun-Fat.
Yep.
She's since been in, like, more serious movies or, like, sort of more mainstreamy movies like Crazy Rich Asians and stuff. She's been on Star Trek Discovery.
Yep.
So she's had a pretty vibrant career. I believe I looked her up the other day, she's almost 60. She's 59. She can still do martial arts stuff. So this basically looked like a weird kind of pop multiverse martial arts comedy drama.
Yeah.
Or something like that with her. But I could not make much from the trailers other than I kind of felt like there was some depth to it, to the vibe. And it was put out by A24, a studio known for kind of like indie flicks and sometimes especially horror things. But they do other indie stuff too. But they made like Hereditary and a bunch of things I've been a blank on, but probably like The Lighthouse, I think. They do indie flicks. So, Randy, tell me, what is the premise of Everything, Everywhere, All at Once?
I want to say, I had the same thing. I saw the trailer, I love Michelle Yeoh, I like multiverse stuff. I was like, oh, this looks cool. And then the reviews started coming in from friends who'd seen it, and everyone was loving it, talking about how it was the best movie they'd ever seen. And so
I actually dialed back my expectations a little bit based, I was like, all right, don't overhype it. And I have seen a few people who it didn't connect with, so I would say, I think at the very least, you got to be like, that was an ambitious and weird and fun movie.
Yeah.
And ideally, it will connect with you. But
and I would say, if you don't like this, you're a monster.
Probably soulless.
Yeah, probably a soulless monster.
All right, so premise-wise.
So premise. So we should say, by the way, first, before, that we already have spoilers.
Oh, right.
Like, the premise itself is a spoiler. So if you're not, if you've not seen this, go see it. Trust me, you should go see it.
Yeah, we both really liked it. It actually has something to say. It's pretty touching at times, and bewilderingly manic the rest of the time.
Yes.
And hilarious a lot of the time. Yeah.
All right, so the premise of Everything Everywhere at Once is that Evelyn Wang is the sort of the matriarch of this small family. She's got her husband and her daughter, who is now grown, and they're kind of estranged a little bit.
Yep.
Her father is coming to town, and they run this laundromat that is sort of a maybe failing laundromat. It's got, like, it's got
there's
it's
some got tax some customers. Issues or whatever.
Yeah, there's some tax
they're about
issues.
To be audited.
Right. So they go into the audit where they're audited by a player character played by Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yep.
And in the midst of this audit, she starts getting these visions. Her husband basically drags her into a broom closet and starts telling her these things, and he's like an action movie version of himself.
Right.
And he's telling her about this threat called Jobu Tabaki, which is like a multiversal threat.
I'm so glad you looked up that name, because I would not have quite remembered
and
it.
And she is like, she doesn't buy any of it. She thinks he's losing his mind. And then she gets attacked by the like multiversal version of Jamie Lee Curtis's auditor.
Yes. can we say who, what is it, Jobu?
Jobu Tabaki.
Yes. Jobu Tabaki. Is that one word?
We're doing spoilers. It's two words.
Two words. Jobu Tabaki. So that is her daughter.
Yes.
Her daughter
is Stephanie Hsu from Birds of Prey.
Right.
She's played Cassandra Cain.
She's great in this.
She's great in this.
And she is a lesbian who's bringing her girlfriend, wants to bring her girlfriend to this family get together where they would be meeting the grandfather. And it's not that like the family is wildly traditional, but like it's clearly like something that Michelle Yeoh, the mom, is not ready to do. She's like, I can't like, your grandfather's not going to understand.
Your grandfather's not ready. Yeah,
he's not ready, and that kind of suggests maybe she's not ready for it.
Yeah,
and then she also kind of has some issues with her husband.
Yeah,
and then there's stuff with the business.
Her husband, Ki Hoi Kwan, who's playing Raymond, who is, by the way, Short Round from Temple of Doom, and he is great here.
He is. I think you said, Randy, like that was like maybe his Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom might have been his like sort of one and only American movie, or maybe he did like Goonies.
I think he was in Goonies. I think he was in Goonies as well. Yes,
but like then he kind of disappeared, and I think might have done like Chinese cinema.
I'm looking to see. So he has a credit on an '80s TV show called Nothing Is Easy.
Okay.
From 1986-97.
Yeah.
One credit in 1991, and then in the TV series Head of the Class in 91.
Wow.
And then he was in Encino Man.
Oh. And so he's just kind
of
like...
He's got little bits and pieces, but not a lot of stuff. He hasn't worked in 20 years.
Wow. So he kind of like came out of nowhere to appear in this really great role. That's very cool for him and cool for the audience.
He's also going to be an American-born Chinese coming up. So, but he plays sort of this Nebushi dude who has this action movie version of himself in the other multiverse. So basically, what happens is you can access your multiversal selves and your other skill sets.
Yes.
By this technology they've created.
Yes.
And what they find out is that her daughter is like, I don't want to spoil too much about it.
Say too much.
But basically,
you will see multiple incarnations of everybody.
Yeah, but you have to do weird stuff to access your timeline.
Right.
You have to do like weird specific things that your multiversal doppelganger. So there's a fight scene in here in which they're all fighting to put a butt plug in. Because will activate their martial arts powers.
Yes.
And it's bizarre and funny.
It is the funniest
thing
I've seen in my life.
Yes.
It was so insane. There's... Yeah, it's hard to say stuff without spoiling too much.
Yeah.
But, like, you will also see the incarnations of her daughter as kind of, like, an evil warlord.
Yeah, yeah.
Has, like, some... Just the craziest costuming
sort
that
of
I think...
K-pop looking.
That, I'm hoping will become a staple of, like, sort of comic conventions and pop cultural, like, cosplay stuff. Because there's just all kinds of wild ideas and great visuals. And along the way, it's sort of, like... Like, it kind of, once it gets going... it's pretty manic. Like, it's pretty wild. You will be as bewildered as Michelle Yeoh, but at the same time, I thought they were always pretty clear about the basics of what's going on.
I was never lost. I didn't know what was going to happen,
right.
But I was never lost as what was supposed to be going on.
Right.
And I think that's a trick. That's a good trick for a writer or director to be able to pull off.
Yeah.
Also, it's got some real emotional stakes. Like, this could easily have been, like, just wacky for no reason, but they really nail the emotional stuff at the end.
Right. If you just look at the basic concept of, like, what would it be like to see other paths your life could have gone, this is, like, a lot of the stuff they handle that way is comedic in this.
Yeah.
But, like, there's also serious stuff in there, and serious questions about relationships and things like that, that are asked and answered or struggled with,
yeah.
Like, because it's not one something the kind of movie where there's quite a pat answer, which I appreciate. I think that's something that generally indie movies are kind of all about. They usually don't want to say, oh, let's say everything works and we tie it up with one big bow.
Right.
That said, the ending is very emotionally satisfying, mm-hmm. and pretty emotionally intense, I'd say. I ended up really liking it.
This is easily my favorite thing I've seen all year, and I don't know what's going to top it.
If I was to throw a criticism at it, it would only be that the manicness of it is a little exhausting at times. But even that, I kind of, in retrospect, was like, I feel like that's kind of part of what makes the catharsis at times feel more real. Like, you kind of almost feel like you've been through an experience.
If I was going to throw a criticism at it, I would say not enough Raccoonie.
And if you're like, what's Raccoonie? Don't you mean Ratatouille?
No. I do not,
and really, there's nothing that can prepare you for it.
No, there's not.
And nothing can prepare you people for the scene that takes place at what looks kind of like the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
I don't even want to quite say what that one is, but...
No, like, there's all kinds of wild stuff in it.
There's some pretty wild stuff in it. So very highly recommended. Kind of a really cool roles for everybody involved.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this more than I expected to, and I had pretty high expectations for it. So, all right, I think that's it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more, and until that time,
yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com, and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.